Today's episode of Rob as a Podcast is sponsored by 5-4 Club. You don't need to scheme and plot ways to improve your wardrobe when you sign up for 5-4 Club. For just $60 a month, get 2 to 4 seasonally curated items designed to perfectly match your unique style profile. This month, get a double pack of clothes when you sign up, a $240 value, with the promo code RHAP at 5-4club.com. So go ahead and check it out. Avoid the hassle of shopping for clothes at the mall. That's promo code RHAP at 54club. That's FIVEFOURclub.com. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino back here to talk about why the latest two game changers have lost the game. And here he is back after a long hiatus in the offseason. The man who wrote the rule book for Survivor way back when on Reality News Online. Here is the great David Bloomberg. David, how are you?
Good, good. How are you?
Very good, David. How was your offseason?
My offseason was long, but it was good. I enjoyed some of the scheming and plotting on Hunted.
Yes, you watched Hunted?
I did, and listened to the podcasts and enjoyed them. But I think I enjoyed the failed scheming and plotting on Hunted even more than anything else. The wigs and the ATM in the bus station. Those were some great scheming and plotting moments.
Yeah. Did you work on a blog of why David and Emily lost?
No, I didn't. I just don't feel we had quite enough information there. You know,
I think somebody could have used the spy bunker on Hunted.
Yeah. Yeah, but you have to move every 48 hours or something. That's the problem. You don't actually know all the rules on Hunted. So
yeah, that maybe you find them out as you go.
Right. Maybe next season, you know, we'll have a better understanding of it.
Yes, as the game of Hunted continues to evolve. All right, so here we are. And for new listeners, what we like to do here on Tuesdays following the episode from the previous week, we get into David's rules that he has put together of why each Survivor player lost the game, with the thinking being, if you could avoid violating any of David's rules, theoretically, you would win the game every time, right, David?
Well, theoretically, and, you know, occasionally you'll have to win a challenge, you know, maybe balance on a beam or something like that.
Yes. And sometimes in the case of Tony Vlachos, you can violate all of these rules and win.
Yeah, it does happen.
So either way, we have a fun time going through the list. And today we're going to be talking about both Sierra and Tony. David, what were your thoughts overall on the Game Changers premiere? Were you devastated to lose Sierra and Tony?
I'm going to annoy some people here and say, no, I wasn't.
Oh, you're not Team TV?
Oh, I'm Team TV. But if it came down to Tony versus Sandra, I'm glad Sandra stayed.
The queen is still the queen.
That's right. The queen is still the queen. I enjoy Tony a lot. And, you know, if they could have kept that threat alliance together for more than 5 minutes, then that would have been huge amounts of fun. But if it comes down to those two, I got to stand by Sandra.
So, David, before we get into this, did you fill out your, speaking of two great winners, your March Madness for the Survivor Best Winner Tournament from our Selection Sunday Berquist podcast earlier this week?
I did not yet. I'm going to as soon as we're done. I do see that there will be some very difficult choices to make, and there will also be some easy choices.
Yes,
to make.
Yes, like any March Madness bracket. Yeah, it's tough to fill out. You could listen to that podcast up on the website with Randy Neupel, myself, and Akiva Winokur from the weekend. Very fun podcast, and we'll have the results of our Survivor March Madness poll coming out over this weekend on Rob as a Podcast. So be on the lookout for that. Okay, David, so anything you want to set up before we get into your rules? Of course, you could read the full version of David's rules up on our website with the link robhasawebsite.com/survivor rules.
Right. The one thing I did want to talk about, I don't do a preseason podcast, so I made my predictions on Twitter. And first thing that I said was I didn't expect a super big name to be voted out first. In fact, I made a bet with Australian Survivor's Nick Iadanza that Sandra would survive her first tribal council, and she even made it through two. So I'm waiting for him to pay up the $10. although he said something about converting it to Fiji dollars, so I'm not sure I'll ever see that money.
Okay.
But for a winner pick, I chose Malcolm before realizing that half the damn internet chose Malcolm.
Yeah.
So I guess
the safe
either
pick,
I'll,
the chalk yeah, pick, Malcolm.
Yeah, I guess I, you know, I thought I was being brilliant here, and then I found out I'm being the same as everyone else. And I guess either I'll be right and everyone will say it was obvious, or I'll be wrong and have a lot of people crying along with me.
Yeah.
So you know, that's
kind
those
of a lose lose. I mean, even if you win, yeah. you can't really take too much credit for it.
Exactly.
And then if you get it wrong, you know, you made the obvious pick and got it wrong.
Yeah. So had I realized that, which I guess, you know, bad on me for not realizing that was going to happen, then I probably would have made a different pick. But Malcolm was just the one that I felt was going to do it. So
yeah, you
so
didn't
we'll
go out
see.
On a limb like I did, like Ozzy, which actually Ozzy is frequently found on a limb. So that was a good
yes.
way to go.
Yes, I still think your pick is crazy, but, you know, if you win, then...
But my reasoning is sound, right?
Right. Well, yeah. Well, we'll just say you were out on a limb. big okay. risk, big reward.
Go you know, big or go home, David. I make big
right.
moves. Okay.
That's
so
right.
let's get into the two-hour premiere episode. Anything to set up, David?
I know that we didn't get to see Andrea, well, basically at all, or her tribe a whole lot.
Right.
But I did find one interesting thing in a web confessional from her talking about how if her tribe had gone to tribal council, she wanted there to be a unanimous vote because they all knew a swap, you know, would be imminent, and they didn't want factions forming that could bite them in the ass when a swap occurs. And considering what ended up happening with the votes on the tribe that actually did go to tribal council, I just wonder if this was a common sentiment which helped create the unanimous vote against Sierra and almost unanimous vote against Tony. So just an interesting thought that's kind of floating out there, doesn't really have to do with why either of them lost. But like I said, I found Andrea's statement to be, you know, quite insightful.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, and I hadn't heard her say that. I didn't watch everybody sort of like get reacquainted with blank interviews that were on the CBS All Access Secret Scenes. I wonder if one of the things that has happened, if everybody knows a swap is coming, I'm wondering if maybe people aren't super invested in their original starting tribe and getting that tribe unity. And while I said I thought that Nuku probably tried harder at that, I wonder if they were all just sort of like being sort of like polite and courteous to each other, knowing that maybe the game's not going to start until they get down to three tribes. And so both groups were sort of looking for an easy answer in the first one and then ended up getting into sort of like this Tony versus Sandra feud, not by choice. And I think that you had some people maybe on the fence, like Malcolm, like Michaela, maybe even like an Aubrey, who were like, I'm not going to ruin my game over this.
Right, right. And you know, we'll see more of that later. But I think it is an interesting point, the way it swung so heavily in the same direction for everyone.
And if that's the case, then I would argue that maybe the next time they do a season like this, to not switch to three tribes so quickly.
Right, right. All of a sudden they're sitting around expecting a swap and nothing happens. And they're all like, well, heck.
Right. Everybody's playing tight because I don't want to make enemies that I'm going to be on the tribe of six with.
And then you have more of that groupthink that Jeff Probst was talking about.
But, right.
The only other thing I did want to point out, Sierra, in her pregame interviews, said that she only wanted there to be one person named Sierra on the show so that she wouldn't have to get a nickname. And she succeeded.
Shut the front door.
For Sierra.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, David, why don't you take us into rule number one, of course. Should survivors scheme and plot? I said that both Tony and Sierra are the faces, the literal people who define the big moves era of survivors. This should be an open and shut case, right?
Yeah, it pretty
open
much
open and
is.
Shut the front door, right?
Yeah.
Shut the front door.
Yeah, I mean, this is a season of game changers, at least in theory. So every single one of them should know they need to scheme and plot. And so that means that while this is the number one rule, I always emphasize that, it's also possible that this will be the rule this season that is the least likely to actually cause people to get voted out. Now, there are a few people who have not previously been known for their strategic skills, such as your winner pick. So I'm sure it may
I don't know
come
if that's
up.
Quite fair, David, but that I understand the point.
Yes, yes. But, you know, so it may come up later, but not really here with Sierra or Tony. Sierra wasn't in on all the conversations, obviously, but when she was there, she was trying to strategize. It certainly didn't go well, but she was trying. And Tony, as he usually does, went a step further. He had a good, solid majority alliance of five big threats in a nine-person tribe, like for a commercial break or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then it all blew up.
I don't even think it lasted across a commercial. I think it was within one segment.
So we'll certainly talk about that in a minute. But for this rule, suffice it to say, like Sierra, he was also trying.
All right. So both of them did scheme and plot. So I guess the question is, did they scheme and plot too much? I guess let's start with Sierra. We saw that she was the person who was throwing out names, quote unquote. Does that constitute scheming and plotting too much?
I'm going to have to say yes. You know, like I said, they were both trying, but trying too hard can make things worse, and that is definitely a common theme we have today. Listening to her post-game interviews, she said she doesn't think she was throwing out more names than anyone else, but she also noted that the game moved more slowly this time than it did in Second Chance. And in an Instagram post, she said she came in hot.
Yeah.
On top of that, her CBS reintroduction video has her talking about how she wanted to win more than anyone else there. And I would say that it probably showed to her fellow players. She also said in the reintroduction video that she went into Second Chance too aggressively. And this time she planned to make the same big moves, but in a more sly way and not shouting about it. She believed going in that she would be extremely overlooked and underestimated, which tells me she did not have a good read on what the other players thought about her heading into the game.
Yeah.
Once she was there, she claimed she slowed down. She wasn't doing anything that anyone else wasn't doing. Maybe that's true, maybe not. But I've talked here on these podcasts about confirmation bias, and I might not use that term, but we seemingly have another case of it here. So you may remember my story about the coworker who was caught by the boss reading the newspaper.
Who could forget, David?
Who could forget? Yes, he became tagged with that label.
A tale as old as time.
So if we accept what Sierra is saying in interviews now, it may be that the same thing happened to her, which is, you know, her fellow players expected her to be playing too hard. Then when she did some of the same things that others around her were doing, their opinion of her was confirmed. And, you know, just like that, you have Malcolm complaining she was wrecking his zen, and others were talking about how she was throwing out names too soon. And as I watched, I felt like the group was trying to write why Sierra lost right there on TV. So, yeah, she, whether she knew it or not, she came in with a reputation for overplaying, and she did a couple things at least that got them thinking that.
Yeah, and that's why I kind of like what Tony ended up doing when he first got to the beach in terms of the confirmation bias. Like what you're saying, where Sierra has this reputation, oh, big move Sierra, she's always up to something, she's playing the game hard. And then even if she plays the game, and I don't think she played the game overly hard in the first 3 days, if she does anything, then people are like, see, oh, she's doing it. Where Tony, I think, knew everybody was going to think that way of him. And so for him to kind of make a joke out of it when he first got to the beach, I thought was okay, because he was sort of like playing into the confirmation bias and sort of trying to make it a joke. Did he go too far with the spy bunker? Perhaps. But I thought that just talking about and isolating when he got to the beach, said, all right, I'm going to go look for the idol. Oh, yay! Like that was kind of fun to steer into it.
Yeah, I don't know. I see what you're saying, but I do think he played a little too much into that same confirmation, because even before the game started, he was, you know, running around camp with his big stick and jumping out at people. And everybody, or at least a lot of the people who Josh and others interviewed, they were like, we don't understand what's going on with him being crazy.
I'm not saying it was the best plan in the world, Dave. Yeah. I'm just saying that that, you know, people had that confirmation bias on Tony anyway, and at least he tried to actively combat it by steering into it.
Well, I guess that's, yeah, he steered into it for sure. I don't know that that's how you combat it. Hey, everybody thinks I'm wild and crazy, so I'm going to be wilder and crazier.
Yeah.
You know?
Hey, it works for some people.
It does. I don't think it worked for him, though. besides the running around, jumping out at Ponderosa.
I don't think that's what did him in, is what I'm trying to say.
No. But, you know, one of the things, as Josh and some of the other embedded writers, after the interviews were over, he yelled to them, apparently, "I hope I F some S up for you now." And, you know, said that really loudly, according to Josh's article. And I think it just reminded people he is crazy. And he was doing something pregame that they couldn't figure out. And then when the game actually did start and he took off, you know, running and cackling and spy bunkering and everything else, which, by the way, I thought it was pretty funny that when he dug the spy bunker, people saw that he had dug something and immediately assumed he was looking for more idols.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was, you know, pretty amusing. But he was going a million miles a minute. And that was before he said to us that he was getting bored at the beginning of the second episode.
Mm-hmm.
He was just confirming everything the other players worried about. And, oh, I think it just drove them crazy. But as far as the spy bunker, I'm going to take a different side here than a lot of people have. And I don't think it was a terrible idea.
Okay.
I think the execution wasn't great.
Why do you like it so much?
Well, it went along with you know, some things we've seen before of people spying on other players, which can get some good information if done properly. He did it. Sandra did it. You know, some other people have done it. He just did it in the wrong place or the wrong way, or, you know, too soon and too obviously.
The spy bunker really could have been worth its weight in gold. Because could you imagine a point in the season where two of the players are going over to the water well and they're like going to be in the middle of having a conversation and then they like step on Tony in the spy bunker. Like, ow! Did you hear something? He'd have to like fake like, "Oh my god, I had a heart attack. Oh, thank you for finding me."
And then all these branches fell on me.
Yeah. I was just in the middle of cleaning up these leaves and then all of these branches fell and then I had a heart attack and I was passed out. Thank you for reviving me.
Yeah, we did miss that.
Could have been gold. Know?
So anyway, we had the spy bunker, but the issue was that he blew it by trying to catch Sandra in a lie. And, you know, that's really the point where everything went sideways for him. He has to know that different people say different things to different players because he did it himself. And he should have talked to her later, not, you know, jumped on her right then and there. And that was a symptom of him playing too hard too fast. In his interview with you, Tony admitted he caused Sandra to target him in self-defense. So in other words, if we're using the remade Star Wars, he was Greedo and shot first. And then Sandra shot back and killed his game, which I guess makes her Sandra Solo or Han Sandra or something like that. Yes, before we get a bunch of complaints, the pure form is that Han shot first and killed Greedo, but Tony can't be Han because his shot missed. So sorry, Tony. So the point is, he did come at her first and it didn't work. It was too much. And I'll wrap up this rule by referencing a discussion from your recap show, because I think Vidas had a very good piece of advice for players. He compared the early stages of Survivor to the early stages of a chess match. Now, I'm going to choose a poker tournament instead,
mm-hmm.
because that's what I do. But either way, the advice is very similar. As he said, you have to play not to lose at this early stage in the game. You're not going to win Survivor or a poker tournament in the first few rounds. You need to build up your base. Sierra should have sat back to see what the other players were doing. She needed to kind of slow play. And another piece of the early game strategy is you also have to not go crazy if something doesn't go your way. So if you lose a few hands early in a poker tournament, you shouldn't just give up and shove all the rest of them in on a bad situation. Similarly, in Survivor, you can't just turn on your alliance because you overhear a few words. Tony basically went all in on a horrible read, and Sandra had him crushed. And that's overplaying, scheming and plotting too much, whether you're in a poker tournament or on Survivor.
I mean, we're going to hear it in a couple of weeks when the baseball season starts, when, you know, some team is going to go like, 8-20 in April, where you can't win the pennant in April, but you sure can lose it.
Right. Exactly.
So we'll see. Better to start mediocre than to flame out and be done after a couple of days. That's what I always say about when I get up out of bed in the morning.
Well, and it's especially true, you know, like we were talking about earlier, if the players believe that this is a temporary situation, Why go in and ruffle everyone's feathers this early? Just sit back, relax, and wait to see where the game takes you.
Yeah, it all is part of the Jeremyification of the game. All right. Rule number three is to be flexible. Now, again, we did not see a ton of Sierra in 3 days. Would you say that she was flexible this time around?
Well, I feel like she probably wanted to follow this rule, but just wasn't quite able to do it. You know, she had said she intended to slow down, but her mind was still in second chance mode. Looking back and talking about it in interviews, she now admits that when she was asked for suggested names to target, she should have turned it around and asked what the others thought, showing that she was flexible. Instead, she threw out suggestions of her own, which potentially annoyed allies of those suggestions, particularly Malcolm, when she named Caleb as a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
I think it made her seem more vested in getting rid of Caleb when she was really willing to go in other directions. She just was the one making the suggestion. So if you're making the suggestion, people assume that, that's what you want to do.
Yeah.
So, you know, so by doing that, she kind of took away some of her own ability to be flexible. She should have just, as she said, sat back and seen what other names came out.
Okay. What about the flexibility of Tony?
Well, Tony, you know, he won in part, obviously, by using his insane behavior and tactics. And he came in doing the same, as we've already discussed. He wasn't flexible enough to realize that he had to change things up. This was not the same group of people, and they weren't going to hop on board his crazy train. Similarly, he clearly did not have his finger on the pulse of his tribe, which is an important part of being flexible. And I suspect it's because he didn't follow the specific part of this rule that says you should generally do more listening than talking.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't seem to be Tony's strong point.
Now, Tony, I do think, is pretty flexible in terms of, you know, he changes his mind a million times of what he wants to do. So that's pretty flexible.
It is, but he didn't have a chance to really make that happen, except in what he caused to happen. Although, you know, by his vote at the end, you know, he made it sound, or rather the editing made it sound like the only votes we were going to see were potentially Sandra and Tony. And instead, the only votes we saw were Tony and a couple for Aubrey.
Yeah, and he did put his votes on Aubrey. So don't say that he was all in on Sandra.
Yeah, and I just wish we knew exactly what was going on there. I mean, I think we've gotten some hints that, you know, what they were talking about, that he...
What are you confused about, David? I'll explain everything.
Okay. Well, you are a know-it-all. As I understand it, despite him going after Sandra, they managed to convince him that everyone was going after Aubrey.
Mm-hmm.
And he believed that. Is that what you understand?
No,
as well?
I don't think he actually believed that. I think that what he said in the exit interview with me was that basically, like, people were freezing him out. They were telling him it was Aubrey. I don't think anybody else was going to be writing Sandra's name down at that tribal council. So the evidence that he was getting from people was that it was going to be Aubrey. So he just ended up putting a vote on her, I guess, hoping that maybe people weren't lying to him.
No, I mean, that's about what I thought. It's confusing to the viewer who doesn't have access to additional information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, they tell him in the episode that, okay, we're going to put the votes on Aubrey. And he says he'll go along with that. I think had he had the numbers for Sandra, then he certainly, that would have been his preference. So I'm going to say Tony was flexible.
Okay. Okay, I'd say he was flexible in voting, but not in behavior.
Yeah, he was not flexible enough to get away from some of the tactics that were made him a success the first time around. That he could have been a little more flexible about. All right, rule number four is don't let your emotions control you. Did Sierra get taken over by her emotions?
Well, I don't really think this contributed to Sierra's loss, but she has said in interviews that she carried in some emotional baggage due to being away from her family so many times in a relatively short period. So I guess that could have caused her to lose focus, but I'm going to mostly discount that here. I just don't think that was what caused it. But for Tony, I do think he failed here.
Okay, where?
Well, he's just so naturally hyped up, and he needed to calm down. You know, as I mentioned earlier, he got bored by day four. And Jeff Varner had a web confessional in which he talked about Tony's behavior. We could debate whether or not to categorize much of what he said as either scheming and plotting too much or letting your emotions control you. But for at least right now, I'm going to go with the latter because I really do think his behavior was emotional in nature. You know, specifically, Varner said they don't need a crazy guy running around and making them all delusional. You know, plus, he said Tony was cross-examining people like the cop he is. He would see Tony pretending to be asleep and then popping up to look around if anybody moved. He said Tony was crazy, made you feel like you're doing something wrong even if you're not. And then the best part was Varner saying, he's the most paranoid person I have ever met, and I lived with Abby.
Yeah.
So, you know, all of this emotional pinball came to a head when Tony heard Sandra mention his name to Troyzan in the jungle. And, you know, as we already talked about, Tony jumped on her to try to catch her in the lie. Again, we already went over that, but it's important to point out that I feel this move was based on instinct, not well thought out, as I feel he pretty much admitted in interviews since then. So that's where he did not control his emotions.
Yeah, I've said that Tony and Sandra, I think that both of them had a lot of pride about who do you think you are? Who do you think you are? I'm the king. No, I'm the queen. And I do think that a lot of that was based on emotion from the two of them and not really looking at how it was probably in both of their best interests to continue to work together with each other.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
All right. So Tony does get emotional. I don't think that he would even argue with that one. David, rule number five, pretend to be nice. Play the Social Game is sponsored by our friends over at the 5-4 Club, Rule 5-4 Club, the LA-based menswear brand. And David, you don't need to know the rules of fashion anymore because 5-4 Club will send you 2 to 4 seasonally curated items of clothing to help you build a thorough and well-balanced wardrobe, the same way that you would plan to build a well-balanced strategy for Survivor.
Would that also be like building a well-balanced spy bunker?
Yes, yes. Well, even better, nobody will quibble with your wardrobe decisions like they would with the decision to build a spy bunker because your wardrobe should give you confidence, and 5-4 Club is going to help you build it up with a profile for every type of guy, whether you're looking for clothes for work, to go out, for the weekend, whatever. 5-4 has got you covered with 4 style profiles, classic, casual, forward, and mix. They've got free shipping and send everything directly to your doorstep. Be stylish without breaking the bank with 5-4 Club. With this month's offer, with the promo code RHAP, 5-4 Club will send you a double package for your first month. In your bag of tricks, you will have a double package of clothes from the 5-4 Club with the promo code RHAP. It's a $240 value, only $60. So go ahead and use the promo code RHAP at 54club.com. That's FIVEFOUR club.com. Promo code RHAP. This offer expires at the end of March, March 31st. Okay, David? All right. So rule number five of playing the social game. I guess being well-dressed is also part of playing the social game, right?
It is. It is. I think Varner probably wins on that.
Best dressed castaway?
Definitely. I think so.
Wow. Game changer.
Until he pulls the sleeves off of his shirt again.
Well, that's his look, you know. Somehow. The Barney Rubble look. Okay.
Yeah.
So, Sierra, did she pretend to be nice?
Yeah, I mean...
No, she I'll is nice, okay?
Well, okay. Sorry. Well, I think Tony's probably nice, too, unless you're like a crook or, you know, someone, some sort of weasel or something like that.
Yes.
You know, I don't think that either of them really had any problems in this area. I would say both were fairly well-liked, and even on social media, since the episode, I've seen their tribe mates saying very nice things about them. I don't think that the social game or pretending to be nice or anything like that had a whole lot to do with them being voted out.
Okay, so both of them were nice. Malcolm even said that he loves Tony, so both of them had a good social game this time around. Okay, so rule number six is do not be too much of a threat. I think that we have some pay dirt here.
Yeah, yeah, we might, a little bit.
I mean, this is going to be the rule of the season for the most part, right?
I think it is. For the most part, like you said, And I did consider moving it to number one, but I said, no, I've got to stick to the classic.
I mean, have you ever cracked this for people, like, you know, going back to the first All-Stars where you had people that, you know, from what I understand, a lot of the really great players got picked off early there because they were threats. So what can one do in this situation? How do you alleviate those concerns?
Well, in some cases, there isn't a whole lot you can do. I mean, let's say original All-Stars. I think that, you know, that guy, what was his name? Rob.
Boston,
you know,
Rob.
No, the other Rob.
Oh.
The good Rob.
Oh, come on. Stop. Let's say Richard Hatch. Okay.
Okay. Well, Richard Hatch, I mean, there are just some players. There's not a whole lot you can do. People are going to target you because of who you are. And I think at some point this may happen with Sandra, although she may be scamming them all with this, oh, no one will ever vote to give me another $1 million, which I think is baloney. I would vote for her. If you're in that super high top tier, honestly, it would depend on each person. You know, Tony, in his case, he would have to do something very different than what Richard Hatch would have had to do or would have to do if he came back. Some of them, it's a little easier. You pull it back. Some of them, you don't pull it back. You play into it. Or at least you become the Threat Alliance like they had talked about. I mean, I really do think the Threat Alliance would have been a great thing for all of them. They all band together. They get rid of the people who are not the big threats. And, oh, voila, you have all the threats that are left. So if no one's a bigger threat than anyone else in particular, then you're all on equal footing. You know, these two, Sierra and Tony, were obviously both threats before the game ever began. And, you know, going in, I don't think most people would have expected Sierra to be considered more of a threat than Tony, but certainly some did. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that on Jordan Parhar's Happy Hour winner draft, they left Sierra to one of the last two picks.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that say? It says that people saw that she wasn't going to win. She was someone who was going to get picked off fairly early. Michaela, in particular, came in gunning for Sierra because she said Sierra was too sneaky. You know, Josh added in one of his Parade articles after the episode that across the interviews, players expressed concern about Sierra and her fast approach to the game. Then in Sierra's Day After video, she kind of countered this in saying she claimed she was willing to be loyal, but that was just words, and her previous times on the show didn't necessarily support this idea. So she would have had to do something very fast that didn't feed into the confirmation bias.
Mm-hmm.
As for Tony, I mean, come on, it's obvious he's a huge threat. And it's not just that he was the winner, but, you know, he's crazy, he's unpredictable, he's paranoid, he could find idols. And I think most of the group this time wanted to take a calmer and more measured approach to the game. Tony being around could really knock that out of whack, both with him, you know, shooting off in a different direction strategically and because of possible idol plays. Even Haley said in a web confessional, hey, they have an open shot at Tony, so why not take it before he has a chance to get 3 immunity idols?
Mm-hmm.
So far, go to Haley for a whole lot of strategy talk. But she saw that it was right there, which means everybody was thinking it probably. In his CBS postgame interview, Tony indicated that he was surprised the rest of his tribe wanted to take out a threat like him so early because he could have been their shield. But I think what he's forgetting is, like I just said a couple minutes ago, he's not the only threat around. This season is filled with threats. So there isn't really a reason to keep around someone like that at this early stage of the game. You know, right now, he wasn't a meat shield. He was just a threat. He was a threat to do all those things I listed earlier. Might as well get rid of him if he's already causing problems, which he was, and there are plenty of other shields around.
I wonder if maybe Tony could have been saved in some sort of a different casting situation where he was such a threat, like head and shoulders above the other people that were on that tribe. I wonder if you brought Tony back in some sort of like a heroes versus villains redux where maybe he was on a tribe with a bunch of troublemakers if he would have had a chance in that scenario.
It's possible, I think, but in this scenario, his best bet was to dial it down, to ratchet down the tone kind of thing, just to look around and say, okay, everybody's not acting crazy. I'm not going to either. The rest of them didn't know him outside of the game. He could have said, oh, that was editing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I only acted crazy like 10 minutes out of every day and they just put it all together.
Yeah.
You know, try it that way instead of doubling down on the behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would have, you know, benefited him more and kind of erased some of the thought of him being a threat in their mind.
But to go that way also, you know, you couldn't say, all right, try that because this didn't work. But there's also a great chance nobody's ever going to forget about Tony. And the fact that he's being quiet, I think might even make people say, oh, why is he being so quiet? What is he up to? What is he up to? We got to get rid of him. So, you know, he's kind of in a damned if he does, damned if he doesn't type situation. All right. Rule number 7, vote out the weak and then the strong, then the weak and then the strong. So Sierra, with all due respect, not one of the challenge standouts in Survivor history. So, okay, for vote out the weak. But when you have Tony versus Sandra on the chopping block, David, would you say, is this a violation of vote out the weak?
Okay, so first, Sierra. Yes, you're right. Okay, we don't need to say much more for that. You know, she's
very strong with puzzles. She did not get the puzzle done in the first episode this time around.
Right, and it was a puzzle that she, of all people, should have known. So yes.
Well, she's also
exactly
never
right
successfully put that puzzle together. To be fair,
she should. Yeah, I guess that's true. Although she did later say her mom told her what the trick was. So
okay,
but. I can see how people might be scratching their heads for the second vote, but I need to point out that this rule also notes there is something to be said for not worrying about voting off the weak early on if you know that tribe swapping will occur at some point. Instead, keep an alliance partner, which should almost always be your top concern.
Mm-hmm.
So we already talked about how, you know, they knew the swap was coming. What we saw on TV was a number of the players talking about how they needed challenge strength. At the time, I was on Twitter saying certainly they're smart enough to know a swap is imminent, and so it doesn't matter. And we did receive confirmation of that in two different ways. First, you know, I mentioned the Jeff Varner web confessional earlier. Well, he also said he was sitting there thinking, I'm not great at challenges. I don't need people running around saying we need strength. And second, Tony mentioned in his interview with you that the players did expect an early swap, which was one reason he couldn't convince them to vote out someone else. You know, I suspect it was just edited in a way they didn't show us anything about that part of the discussion because it would have removed a lot of the suspense for the vote.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, if they were expecting a swap, there's no reason to vote out someone who is weaker in challenges because you might not be with them. So why bother? Vote out someone else.
So do you feel like that Sandra was in fact saved by the fact that they were expected the swap?
It's hard to say whether she was saved by that or by the fact that she's Sandra and can seemingly talk herself out of anything, talk her way out of anything. But obviously that had to play a role, and there were enough of the others thinking that as well. It certainly didn't hurt.
David, there are two appendices. The first of these say, do whatever it takes to get idols. Now, I have to say, you say, do whatever it takes to get idols. Did Tony not do that when he got to the island?
Well,
you said whatever
well,
it takes.
Except that was a decoy. He wasn't really even looking for idols at
first.
He was. Afterwards. But, I mean, he basically has indicated he searched everywhere around camp for an idol or a clue. At first, that made me wonder if producers decided to hold off on making idols available until after the swap, because we know from the previews there will be one available in the upcoming episode. But Dalton Ross, as a member of the Embedded Survivor Press, tweeted a picture out recently of what looked like a potential clue scroll hidden in a tree trunk at Nuku. So maybe there was a scroll out there and Tony just didn't find it. But we know for sure he tried. As for Sierra, we don't know. We have no idea.
I mean, there were idols or clues hidden in the camp the last time in the first episode where we had an idol at the challenge. So I think it's reasonable to believe that the scroll was out there and nobody was able to find it, especially adding in that Dalton Ross piece of evidence.
Right, right. And I think Tony mentioned, you know, obviously they played after Millennials versus Gen X. There was that big storm. There might have been another big storm in between the two, but he mentioned that a storm had come through. There were branches down everywhere, and that made it more difficult to find anything. So maybe that was the reason, although, like, you know, Dalton found it. So, so he's better than Tony, I guess.
Dalton is very tall, though.
Ah, okay.
he has better visibility.
Now, I do want to mention that in Tony's Day After video, he said he missed his chance to pretend that he had an immunity idol at tribal council when he realized he was probably going to be voted out. And, you know, that might not have changed the vote, but it would have been some great TV. So I'm also sorry that he missed his chance to do that.
Yeah, it was a pretty solid plan. We actually saw Russell Hance attempt something like this in his swan song on Survivor when he got voted out of Zapatera, when he had Krista Klump and Stephanie Valencia. And then they were faking that there was an idol that they were going to play, and they were trying to end up getting, because they were going to split the votes, and then he was going to try to get somebody else to flip. So it did provide some theater in Russell Hance's boot episode.
Yeah. And maybe it would have changed things up a little bit, but maybe it would have done nothing because there were already two votes going to Aubrey anyway. So, you know, they might have just figured, hey, we'll just keep our plan the same. We'll stick to the plan.
Again, it's one of these things where it probably wasn't going to work, but it's the kind of thing where he didn't want to leave any bullets still in the chamber. Like, oh, I thought of that. That might have worked. Yeah. Even if it was a 1 in 100 shot that it was going to work, I think he would have rather taken the swing than gone out not taking that swing. But I think that Tony shouldn't lose any sleep over that.
Right.
One.
I agree.
All right, so David, ultimately, on a night where two big Survivor, can we say icons?
Sure.
Okay, let's say it. We'll say it. Two big-time Survivor players go down. What's your final assessment?
Well, you know, coming in, a lot of people thought the first vote was going to target one of the huge, huge threats. But the players decided to take it a little easier for that vote. And quite honestly, they probably would have for the second vote if Tony hadn't gone full Tony on them. And that's not to say Sierra wasn't a threat, because she certainly was. But in that first vote, as you know, the group just doesn't need much of a reason to vote someone off. If you have even just a few people coming in thinking Sierra is a threat and needs to leave in a hurry, that could be the spark. Then you pour on the fuel because she failed in the challenge and her behavior appeared to confirm what they already thought of her as being too sneaky. And boom. You have an explosion that results in a unanimous vote. Last season, she wanted everyone to play the game. And this season, she got played.
That's a little harsh, David.
Well, she did. I'm not saying anything bad about her. She got played. Coming to the second vote, Tony said in his Day After video that he knew he had a big target because he was too devious and a big threat. And certainly, this is true. But he also said he thought nothing he did this time around caused him to lose, and it was all because of Kagyan. However, we all know by now that this is simply not the case. Tony played too hard, too fast. He let his emotions run away with him. And mostly, he created a perfect spot for himself in the Threat Alliance. But then Tony shot first and forced Sandra into a spot where she had to take out the person who was targeting her. Both Sierra and Tony were threats coming into the game. Both of them did things to confirm to their tribe mates, at least in their tribe mates' minds, that the threats remained. Neither of them showed that they had changed. Neither of them were able to calm down the fears of those around them. And that is why Sierra and Tony lost.
Yeah, no, I do agree. I think that both of them had a really tough situation that they were coming into and did not do enough to reassure their allies that everything was going to be okay this time around. All right, so Tony and Sierra are gone. This week, we're back to just one tribal council. We'll lose one more Survivor Game Changer after a swap, David. Have you given any thought to how the swap might play out? I'm sure that there are some people who have gone through and done the screenshot of who's matched up with who. I have not done that sort of research.
No, I haven't either. And even if I did, I probably wouldn't talk about it here because I know that there are people who are spoiler averse. Honestly, from the two previews that we've seen, as far as I can tell, we know that there's a swap. We know that JT strands some tribe mates in the ocean.
I don't even know how you pull that off.
I know.
But sure.
Looking forward to that one. And they catch a goat. So, you know, who knows? Now, looking ahead as best we can, I think the early swap could hurt Sandra in much the same way that many people thought an early tribal council was going to hurt her in the beginning of the game.
Right. This could be when those chickens come home to roost. For all of the players that are really weak challenge performers, like the Ceres, like the Sandras, like the Jeff Varners, I think that this is a very dangerous time for all those players if they went to a tribal council.
It is. And it also shakes up the foundation that she was building. And so, you know, whatever she was able to pull together, that could be gone now. So we'll have to see. I don't think she will be voted out this week, but we'll have to keep an eye on things. As far as predicting who will get the boot, the only thing I can come up with on the limited information we have is maybe the other remaining winner is in trouble because of, you know, the apparent stunt in leaving other players out in the water so he can search for the idol. If they know that's what actually happened, it could certainly be a big strike against him, which is exactly what a former winner should be trying to avoid, especially when you see the first two people who were voted out was because they were playing too hard too soon, in large part. Since we were shown it so blatantly in the preview, I would normally suspect that it will not bite him right away, but I don't think we have much else to go on. So based on very little, I'm going to have to predict that the goat survives to the next episode, but JT does not.
Okay, JT, wow, that would be a huge move this early on in a Survivor season. David, a couple of interesting things about this tribe mitosis, where we go down from two tribes to become three tribes. An interesting fact is that so far we've seen this happen in six tribal councils, three in Survivor Second Chances, and then three in Millennials versus Gen X. I believe each time that it's happened, amazingly, out of six tribal councils, the person who has gone home has been from the group where there was a majority from their original tribe. Hmm. So each time that there's been sort of like a lopsided split, like we saw at Angkor, there was more Takeo than there were people from Bion. Both times that they went to the tribal council, somebody from Takeo went home. And in the case of Monica Padilla, she was in that Bion majority. And then she went home instead of a Takeo person in that group. And then in Millennials versus Gen X, it was very weird how that worked out also, where there was more Gen Xers when CC went home. There were more Millennials when Figgy went home. And then there were also more Millennials when Michaela went home. Will that still hold? I don't know. There are more people from Nuku. So I'll say a Nuku person is going to go home. And in Second Chances each time, it was somebody who was not a huge asset in the challenges. And in that case, the one person that I can see on my board that satisfies both of those requirements would be Suri. So
no, don't even say that.
No, that look, this is the best thing that can happen to Suri if I say that she's the most likely person to go home this week. Okay. So I will bless her with my pick to be the next person to go home. How many times was I right in Millennials versus Gen X?
I don't remember. I don't keep.
Once? Twice?
We'll have to check with Rob's fact checker for that one.
But those are the three people I'm very worried about in this section of the game, of Sandra, Jeff Varner, and Suri. I don't know if there's anybody else that I think is potentially in that category of a challenge liability. Maybe Haley. She did not have a great challenge performance in the first episode. But I think that those are the people that I'm sort of looking at as we go to this portion of the game.
It is interesting. I did not know those statistics that you brought up. I think that it may even be more that way this time around, because I don't know that any real bonds have formed on either tribe that weren't there already. And if you mix, there could be bonds that, you know, have been around for a long time, you know, the Ty and Caleb bond, the rest of the Korong group, and the other people who were split for just two votes on their original, and everyone was like, okay, good, those people are split. Well, they could end up being mixed together again.
And you also have the thing where it's like, okay, well, I know this person's not with me, so it doesn't matter what the numbers are. Let's just get rid of the person who I know isn't going to work with me, and maybe let's see what happens with the people from the other tribe.
Right.
I mean, there's very little reason to believe that it will be like Nuku strong going down to the final six. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do not think that will happen at all.
Right. We will see.
Yeah, we will see.
All right, we're off to the races here on Survivor Game Changers. Of course, you can follow David Bloomberg on Twitter. He is at David Bloomberg. We'll be back again next Sunday to talk about the third game changer out of the game, of course, in our weekly spot. David, is there anything else that you want to let people know about?
Well, I know that there are some great blogs on Rob has a website.
Yes, we have our team of bloggers working very hard after all of the episodes. Some weeks we might have as many as 6 Survivor blogs trying to outdo me with the podcast. And also, we have a great feature that we just added to the website where on each post during the week, we are adding a little bit of a plugin that is going to bring up all of the content for the past week of Survivor. So, for instance, if I look at the Cass voicemail episode, down below, there's a little box where we see the related podcasts and the related blog posts of the week. So each time a new blog post is made for this past episode of Survivor, that will get added to that section on the website. So a easier place to find all of the content for the given Survivor week. So here's what's coming up this week. Okay, we are starting a new schedule. So here we go. On Friday, Scott Gallagher is going to do his pop culture recap. He does sort of like a running diary of the episode. That's going to be on Friday. On Saturdays, we're going to have special features. And next week, we'll have a blog by Sarah Channon. On Sundays, Christian Williams gives us the diplomatic view of the week where he discusses big moves and big mouths. I'd never heard Christian Williams before, but I thought he was very good on the Blogger Preview podcast they did. Dave, did you listen to that?
I did. I thought he was very good also. I give big props to his former blogging editor at the previous website.
The person who discovered him?
Yes, yes.
Okay. On Sundays, Michael Trudeau looks at the edit using quotes from Sandra as titles. And then on Monday, Catherine Lucas looks back at history. And this week, she looks at her favorite first boot, Wendy Jo, to see where the players went wrong. And then on Tuesdays, we have more special feature blogs coming your way. So just keep checking either the blog section. You can go to robisawebsite.com/blog for the Survivor blogs, or look on the bottom of each new post that we put up, whether it's a podcast or a blog, for all the content for a given week. Okay, David?
Okay, that's a lot to read, a lot to listen to. Don't listen and read at the same time because you will get very confused.
Try not. I mean, we're putting the bow right now on the end of a very busy Survivor week. I mean, if you throw that March Madness podcast we did, I think we might have got up over, somewhere around 7.5-8 hours of Survivor podcast for the week.
Oh, at least, probably more. And it was all built up from that long preseason.
Yes. So we had a lot to get through. Again, 2-hour episode. Yeah. David, what's the hashtag today?
Well, I think maybe Tony shot first.
Tony shot first. Okay, there you go. What if you think that Sandra shot first?
What if you think that? Well, then you can use Han Sandra.
And that's in the special edition of Survivor Game Changers. That's what George Lucas said.
That's right. No, George Lucas said that Han did not shoot first.
Okay. All right. Tony shot first. All right. And again, we're talking about Star Wars only, okay? David, great job. We will talk to you again next week on Tuesday back here on Why Blank Lost. Take care. Have a good one. Bye.